Welcome to a new season of SACPA. I can tell by the buzz in the room that everybody's meeting and greeting and getting caught up with what's transpired in your lives over the last few months while we've been on break. This is our 41st season of the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Our motto is, "The lifeblood of democracy is informed public debate," to quote one of our founding members, Gordon Campbell. And for four decades, SACPA volunteers have been organizing weekly sessions to inform our community about current issues of concern. I want to remind you that because it's a new season, it's a new membership year as well, and so if you haven't seen our treasurer, Myrna Green, outside before the session, please do so afterwards if you want to support SACPA through a membership. My name is Cheryl Bradley, and I'm your moderator for today. I want to remind you to pay for lunch, $10, and those little baskets in the center of the table are there for that purpose. Someone will be coming around and collecting it during lunch. We're a volunteer non-for-profit organization, and we rely on the contribution of our members and session attendees to be able to continue our work. So all your donations are most welcome. I'd like to acknowledge our partners at this time, the University of Lethbridge, for their support, including distribution of notices advertising our programs. And I'd also like to thank Country Kitchen Catering for preparing the lunch today. The format of our meeting is 25 to 30 minutes for presentation, half an hour to digest the ideas over lunch and have conversations around your table, and then half an hour for questions. Now I'd like to introduce our speaker for today. Our topic is, have Albertans given the Stelmach government a free ride? If you were here in May or looked at our website, you'd recall that this topic began then with a presentation by former MLA and Wild Rose Alliance party leader, Paul Hyman. And Paul is with us today. Liberal MLA Bridget Pasteur will provide her take on the topic next month, and Bridget is with us today. And in December, Progressive Conservative MLA Greg Wiedek will also address SACPA. Brian Mason, MLA and leader of the Alberta NDP, is our presenter today. Brian was first elected as a member of the Legislative Assembly for Edmonton Highlands Norwood in a 2000 by-election. He was re-elected in the provincial general election in 2001, and he was appointed House Leader of the New Democrat Caucus and critic responsible for Human Resources, Finance, and Agriculture. In 2004, Brian became leader of Alberta's New Democrat Party. He was elected to his third term as MLA in 2004 and to his fourth term in 2008. In addition to his role as MLA and party leader, Mr. Mason serves on several committees, including resource and environment. So please join me in a warm welcome to Brian Mason speaking on "Have Albertans Given the Stelmach Government a Free Ride?"
Thanks very much. It's great to be back here at SACPA, and I'd like to congratulate you on your 41st year in operation. I think the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs is virtually unique in this province. I'm not aware of another organization like it in the other cities, not in Edmonton or Calgary at the very least. And the contribution you make to informed public debate, I think, is simply outstanding, and I want to express my appreciation for the work that you have done over the last 40 first year, sometimes for 40, 41 years. I think we sometimes think that things couldn't get any worse in Alberta, at least I do. And then I think about what it might be like if it wasn't for organizations like SACPAW and the many Albertans right in every corner of our province who continue to fight to have a democratic debate on issues that affect the people of this province. I think it could indeed be much worse if it weren't for the work that you do. The question that I was asked to speak about is whether or not Albertans have given the Stelmach government a free ride. And the easy answer is yes. But I think that perhaps it's a little bit more complex than that. Traditionally, in Alberta, we have a little bit different political culture than other places in Canada, and I think that it goes back to the social credit period, where the government was seen by many Albertans as doing God's work, and the opposition engaged in politics. Now, that was far from a universally held view, but I do think that it created something of a tradition, political culture in this province, which is less critical of government, as long as it's a conservative government in one form or another, than in other provinces. And I do believe that that traditional political culture in Alberta means that people are less engaged politically and more tolerant of the errors that the governments make, particularly governments that have been in power for a long time. We've placed a great deal of hope in our party, and I think among progressive Albertans generally, at the many newcomers that are coming to our province from other countries, but also from other provinces. And I think that this has made a difference. Not as much, perhaps, as we thought, because I think many of the people who are here primarily for economic reasons. And as long as they are working and being economically successful, they aren't that interested in getting involved in politics in depth. Many people are here to earn their fortune and have no expectation of staying here permanently, but I think many in the end will, and I have tremendous hope in the future that the many people coming to us from across the country and other countries are going to profoundly change the political culture of this province, and that governments will be held more accountable. But I don't want to just place the entire responsibility for what's happening in this province and the lack of accountability for the provincial government on the people of the province, because I think the lion's share of it belongs with the government itself. At the beginning, when I was being introduced, Gordon Campbell's quote, I think, places it in perspective. You cannot have a good functioning democracy without informed political debate. And the government in at least two major areas has not provided the people the information that it needs with respect to its major plans. And I want to talk, first of all, about the development of the tar sands in the province of Alberta as an example of where the government is proceeding according to a plan which is known only to itself and is not shared with the people of this province. The second area that I want to talk about, if I have time, is the government proceeding with a plan for our healthcare system without consulting the people of Alberta or letting the people of Alberta know where they're going at all, keeping the public in the dark? Because if the citizens are in the dark about the government's plans, it's very difficult indeed to hold that government accountable for where they're going and to participate in an open democratic debate about the future of our province. Now, in the last provincial election, there was a great deal said about whether or not the government had a plan for the future of Alberta. And we all saw those TV ads, no plan, no plan. I think that the conventional wisdom is that the government has absolutely no plan or had no plan, and Premier Klein certainly admitted as much when he was on his way out. But I believe that the government, in fact, does have a plan or a part of a plan for the future of this province, which is not sharing with the people of Alberta. Now, we've seen the explosive growth that's taken place in this province, and particularly the rapid development of the tar sands around Fort McMurray. We have multiple projects on the go at the same time, even though it seems that that's not in the best interest of Albertans. Peter Lougheed, that noted socialist, has said that he doesn't see why we should have more than one tar sands project under construction at any one time. But we have multiple projects. We have a significant labor shortage. We have massive environmental damage. We have had a severe housing shortage and a shortage of health care and education. Municipal services have suffered, and it's clear that Alberta has a massive infrastructure deficit. All of these things would lead us to believe that, in fact, the government is operating without a plan. One of the first things that Ed Stelmach said after he was elected leader of the Conservative Party and became Premier of Alberta was that he would not touch the brake on Alberta's economy. Now, given all of these negative impacts of this rapid growth, and given that people like Peter Lougheed and many other respected commentators are saying that the pace of development is going too fast, it may appear as a surprising statement. But I believe, and I would submit, that the government in fact has a plan for the development of the tar sands and has been following it. It just doesn't include those things that I mentioned earlier. They have taken systematic steps to bring about the kind of hyper-development in the tar sands that we are now seeing, and this has gone back over a number of years. Now, certainly the high price of oil has helped a great deal in bringing about this rapid pace of development. But I believe that there are other steps that the government has taken that have facilitated that. First of all, was dealing with CO2 emissions based on an intensity emissions basis, which means that you can continue to increase the absolute amount of CO2 emissions as long as the percentage per dollar invested or per barrel of oil produced goes down. This is based on the Bush administration's policy in the United States. Several years ago, they removed the requirement for environmental impact assessments in a large area around Fort McMurray. They brought in changes to the labor code to make it more difficult to unionize construction workers in that sector. And they've supported organizations like CLAC and Merit Contractors Association to de-unionize the workforce, thereby bringing down the cost of labor. They've instituted a low royalty regime on oil, particularly from oil from the tar sands. They have systematically ignored the downstream health effects on Aboriginal people as a result of tar sands development. They negotiated a federal-provincial agreement on temporary foreign workers to facilitate the bringing in of temporary foreign workers to facilitate a massive simultaneous development of numerous projects in the tar sands. And there's a special case as well, which has to do with the export of unprocessed bitumen from the province. So I believe that this constitutes a plan. All of these parts taken together constitute a plan for the rapid hyper-development of our tar sands resources for the benefit of the American market. Housing, the environment, and social needs have not been planned because they were not the priority of the provincial Conservative government. planning for those things is proceeding on an ad hoc and after-the-fact basis because it was not the priority of the government. So it's pretty much an afterthought. I'd like to sort of talk to you about where the plan came from for this hyper-development in the tar sands. In January of 2006, in Houston, in Texas, there was a large meeting, a secret meeting, which we have been able, through Freedom of Information in the United States, groups in the United States, not here, have been able to obtain some documents about. This was a conference that was jointly organized by Energy Canada and the U.S. Department of Energy. And at that meeting were the heads, senior executives, of most of the major oil companies operating in North America, as well as representatives of the Canadian and American governments and of the Alberta government. This meeting and the results of the meeting were never publicly disclosed or announced. But we know from the information that we've been able to obtain that at that meeting it was decided that the production of the tar sands in Alberta would be increased 5 times in a very short period of time in order to meet the U.S. objective of a reduced dependence on Middle East oil, which was enunciated by President George W. Bush. That means 5 million barrels, which will supply 1/4 of the United States oil requirements. There is also, and part of that, a dramatic increase in the export of unprocessed bitumen from our province, which is now 500,000 barrels per day. And that will go, will rise when the Husky project is finally completed, the Keystone and Clipper projects. These are pipelines for raw unprocessed bitumen to the United States. It will rise to 1.2 million barrels a day of unprocessed bitumen. And of course, we are exporting along with the unprocessed bitumen long-term jobs for the people of Alberta. But it is, I think, necessary in order to meet the goal of increasing exports of our oil from the tar sands by five times. So I think what we have is a clear plan, but that plan was not developed in Alberta's legislature or in the Parliament of Canada, nor was that plan actually discussed and voted on in a comprehensive way in either place. And in fact, the people of Alberta have been kept in the dark about the decisions that have been made with respect to our own future. And yet it's the people of Alberta who face the consequences of this decision when they can't find housing, when they end up on the street, when they can't get health care, when their environment is fouled, when they live downstream from Fort McMurray and they get strange cancers, and the government denies that that is happening. So democracy is fundamental, in my view, to the future of this province, and it is being bypassed in favor of decisions that are made in the United States about the future of this province behind closed doors between the American government, the Canadian and Alberta governments, and the biggest oil companies in North America. So I will argue that is, Albertans have not given the Stelmach government a free ride, but Albertans have been kept in the dark about what's actually taking place in our province and are led to believe that this is an inevitable result of the operation of the free market. And I believe that it is far from that. Clearly, the operation of the free market is at play, particularly given the world, the growing shortage of oil in the world, the American strategic position vis-a-vis their traditional sources of oil, and the price of oil. All of those are important factors in driving what's going on. But in fact, there is a plan in place. So I think, ladies and gentlemen, that the Albertans for Change TV commercials didn't quite get it right when they said that there was no plan. There is a plan, but there's not a plan for the things that are important for the people of Alberta simply because that was not the priority of the government. I'd like to talk a little bit about healthcare reform in the same context. We were heavily involved, as were many in this room and people across the province, in healthcare providers and their unions, the Friends of Medicare, people from one end of the province to another, in fighting Ralph Klein's third way. The third way, of course, was his plan to create a second tier of private healthcare delivery. And it was defeated. And credit belongs to all of us who stood up and fought against that, because it was pretty clear that Albertans as a whole, like Canadians, did not want to have private two-tier healthcare in this country. That's not to say there aren't major problems, mostly government-inflicted, on our existing public healthcare system. And those deficiencies in our public healthcare system are, in my view, a deliberate result of government policy to create conditions where private healthcare can be brought in. Nevertheless, the third way was defeated. And one of the interesting characteristics of the third way was that there was considerable consultation with Albertans, and there was considerable information provided to them. There was conferences, for example, that Iris Evans, who was the Minister of Health at the time, organized in Calgary, where she brought in international experts. There was media scrutiny. There was consultations around the province. And the net result was that Albertans were relatively informed about our healthcare system and where the provincial government wanted to take it. And they said no. And this was nowhere truer than in the bedrock Conservative support of rural Alberta, who are already very concerned about the lack of health care that they have in their smaller communities and the lack of doctors that they have. And that was, quite frankly, one of the major reasons why the third way was withdrawn. And I want to just add a little commercial for us in the NDP caucus, because at the end, when it was announced, Ralph Klein in the House blamed us for spreading misinformation resulting in the defeat. And it wasn't misinformation, of course. It was important information and facts that the people needed to have. But the point is, during that discussion, there was a relatively healthy democratic debate around the province. Now, Mr. Leipert is the new Minister of Health. And he is proceeding with a plan to radically change our healthcare system, and he would, I think, admit that. The difference is there's no consultation, there's no discussion around the province, and there's no disclosure to Albertans about what the plan actually is. They are taking steps one at a time and implementing the plan piecemeal without signaling to the people of Alberta what's coming next. Now, Mr. Leipert has said that he's very interested in the Mazankowski report, which many of you may be familiar with from a few years ago. Mr. Mazankowski, of course, is on the board of one of the major insurance companies in Canada that would benefit greatly from a privatized healthcare system. And in the Mazankowski report, there's a number of recommendations: increased private delivery, delisting of services, and various forms of user fees in our healthcare system as a way of controlling public access. Of course, controlling it for people who have less money. And since that time, when we challenge Mr. Leipert in the House, when Friends of Medicare challenges him and other organizations to say where he's going to go, he doesn't answer. Just this week, the Copeman Clinic opened in Calgary. And this is a private clinic. Mr. Copeman, I think, has one in BC and was involved in the case bringing forward the Chiaulli decision in Quebec that paved the way for some of these kinds of clinics. But I think we should be really clear about what that decision in the Supreme Court of Canada said. It didn't say you can have private health care delivery, or you have a right to private health care delivery. It said if the governments cannot provide timely access to necessary care, then they can't also ban people going to a private clinic to get it. So it was a two-edged sword, but it was an indictment of this government, and I think the federal government and other provincial governments, failure to continue to provide the levels of public health care that we need in this country and allowing that system to erode. Nevertheless, the Copeman Clinic, in my view, is just one of these incremental steps towards private health care delivery in our province that Mr. Leipert is proposing. They will not only provide uninsured services for a fee, and there's an annual fee for participating in this clinic, but they will also provide insured services and provide privileged access to those who can pay the fee to insured healthcare services. In other words, queue jumping. So if you have money, you can get insured services, publicly insured services at the Copeman Clinic, ahead of people that can't afford the fee. So the real question before us is, how can you fight something you can't see? The provincial government has learned from its mistake, if you want to call it that, when they brought forward the third way. And they've dispensed with public discussion, and they've even dispensed with providing the public the information as to where they want to take our healthcare system. But let's make no mistake about it. This is a privatized direction. The way it looks to me, based on comments made by Ken Hughes, who's the chairman of this super health authority that they put in place, is to increase the private delivery but fund it through Medicare. In other words, publicly funded, privately delivered health care. And that the big super health authority will become, in many respects, a contracting agency, which will contract to private clinics, private hospitals, private service providers, using public funds in order to provide the healthcare services that Albertans have depended on from the public in the past. And I'm sure I don't have to tell many of you in this room that the greater degree of public or private delivery in our healthcare system increases costs and reduces outcomes. And the research on this is conclusive. It was one of the things that at Iris Evans's symposium in Calgary, where she brought in all the international experts, that they were virtually unanimous upon. But the greater you depend, the more you depend on private delivery of health care, the more expensive it is because of the profit motive that's built in, and the worse the outcomes are because of cost cutting as a result of the profit motive within the healthcare delivery organizations. So, just to sum up, I think that we have some responsibility as Albertans, definitely, for giving a bit of a blank check to Mr. Selmac. But I think that this is really not the whole story. The government has adopted strategies which undermine democracy, which ensure that the citizens of this province do not have the information they need to make the decisions around important policies such as the future direction of this province, its energy strategy, its environmental future, and the future of its healthcare system. And I would challenge all of us to focus on demanding the provincial government provide the citizens of this province with all of the information that's necessary to help them judge whether or not the government is taking us in the right direction or not. I believe that if Albertans had that information, they would be far more critical and far less likely to hand a blank check to the Conservative government of this province. And that, I think, is our challenge. Thank you very much.